We're in Eastertide. We're in the season that follows Lent in the church year. Eastertide is very deliberately 50 days long. Lent is 40, as you may have noticed if you were practicing taking up or putting anything down. That's on purpose. It takes us to Pentecost, but it's also a very deliberate rhythm in the life of the church and an embodied reminder that although the fast makes the feast, in the end, this is a story about a feast. In the end, this is a story about a celebration, about a party, about something good coming into the world forever. And so that's the season that we're in. And it's an interesting biblical story because we have this tendency, I think, and I think we do this with lots of things, not just with the biblical narrative, but we have this tendency to take the biblical story and dress it up in its finest garb and then to just kind of tell that part, you know? And sometimes we dress a 3 up as a 9. We really do. Like every once in a while, we just leave out the parts that we don't like or don't get or just want to get past to get to the party. And so this season in the biblical story, this post-resurrection part of the story, is actually, I find, has a little different cast to it than it's often given in its brief telling at this time of the year. When we dress the story up in its ending finery, when we dress the story up real pretty, what we leave out, and I know you've heard me say this before, if it's already boring, I apologize, I'll try to find a new word next week, but we need to keep coming back to this in my opinion. What we leave out is the middle. But we live in the middle. We just do. We live in an already not yet part of the story. And so if we don't pay attention to the middle part of the biblical narrative, we're going to miss the part of the narrative that is so distinctly about our experience, about the part we live in. And Eastertide, the story just following the resurrection of Jesus, is full of middle. And so I want us to spend a little bit of time there this morning. I want to read us from two of the Gospels, the part that most of our Bibles would just call the resurrection. So this is from the Gospel of Mark. When the Sabbath was over, Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James, and Salome, brought spices so that they might go anoint Jesus' body. Very early on the first day of the week, just after sunrise, they were on their way to the tomb, and they asked each other, "Who will roll the stone away from the entrance to the tomb?" But when they looked up, I'll finish it in a minute. Is your imagination on yet? Because if it isn't, this is the part of the story where you need to switch it on and leave it on. When they looked up, they're in the middle, you guys. Did you hear Jason? Did you hear him at the end of our community time? Pick your head up and look around at the community. This is a beautiful thing. The women are on their way to the tomb, and they're walking like we often walk when we feel the weight of life, when we're just mired in the middle. They've got their heads down. They know where they have to go. They know what they're planning to do. It's not a happy thing. It's a necessary thing. It's a hard thing. It's a grievous thing. It's a challenging thing. It's a middle thing. And they've got their head down. And they're walking along, and they're not thinking about all the details. They kind of have enough of it together, but they're trudging along. And when they do pick up their head, it occurs to them that they have an even bigger problem than they thought. But something else happens at the same time. They've been having this conversation about this dilemma. We got this stone. We got this thing that we can't move on our own. How are we going to solve this? But when they pick up their head and they look at the story that they're in, this is what they see. When they looked up, they saw that the stone, which was very large, had been rolled away. As they entered the tomb, they saw a young man dressed in a white robe sitting on the right side, and they were alarmed. "Don't be alarmed," he said. Every once in a while, you know, the Bible just kind of gives us these dead obvious little pairings. There's a good one. Angels are always saying stuff like that. "Don't be alarmed," he said. "You are looking for Jesus the Nazarene who was crucified. He is risen. He's not here. See the place where they laid him? But go, tell his disciples and Peter, he's going ahead of you
He's going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him, just as he told you.
Trembling and bewildered, the women went out and fled from the tomb. They said nothing to anyone because they were afraid. That's where the earliest manuscripts of Mark end. Mark, as a writer, is not a sophisticate. Mark's an ordinary guy. And Mark's Greek, the language he's writing in, is full of "and." He's always said this short sentence, and then that, and then this, and then that, and then he just kind of strings stuff together. He's not a sophisticated literary figure in the gospel writer, among the gospel writers. Lots of action. People are always doing things suddenly and quickly and immediately in Mark. And then when he tells the story of the resurrection, this is how he ends. This is how the Gospel of Mark, which would have been written to be read aloud in its entirety to a community as a story, this is how it ends. Trembling and bewildered, the women went out and fled from the tomb. They said nothing to anyone because they were afraid. Go in peace. We're done. That's how the story ends in the Gospel of Mark. And now to my favorite gospel. Gospel of Luke. This is the story of the resurrection in Luke. On the first day of the week, very early in the morning, the women took the spices they had prepared and went to the tomb. They found the stone rolled away from the tomb, but when they entered, they did not find the body of the Lord Jesus. And while they were wondering about this, suddenly two men in clothes that gleamed like lightning stood beside them. In their fright, the women bowed down with their faces to the ground, but the men said to them, "Why do you look for the living among the dead? He's not here. He is risen. Remember how he told you while he was still with you in Galilee? The Son of Man must be delivered into the hands of sinful men, be crucified, and on the third day be raised again." And then they remembered his words. When they came back from the tomb, they told all these things to the 11 and to all the others. It was Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary the mother of James, and the others with them who told this to the apostles. But they did not believe the women, because their words seemed to them like nonsense. Peter, however, oh man, so true to type, hey? Peter, however, got up and ran to the tomb. Bending over, he saw the strips of linen lying by themselves, and he went away, wondering to himself what had happened. If Peter was sending a text from the tomb, yeah, the polite version of it would have been a string of question marks, right? That's how the resurrection story ends in the Gospel of Luke. This is a filmmaking cliche. We've all seen some version of this. The car is speeding across the desert because it's in deserts where you get all that awesome cinematographic dust floating in the air, backlit by the late day sun. And so it's speeding across the desert, billowing clouds, the music's ramping up, the stuff's shaking, the camera's very animated, the tension's building, 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 and the car comes, we know there's a cliff, the car comes to the edge of the cliff and it just like, off the edge of the cliff. And then filmmakers do this really deliberately because they're smart. What happens? What happens to the audio?
It drops down.
Maybe you hear wind, but all of a sudden there's all this space. What happens to time?
Slows down.
Exactly. I heard the guy who was directing one of the Bourne films talking about some of their techniques for doing what he called getting the audience to hang on the side of the train. I just thought, that is the picture, right? When the filmmaker reaches out and just kind of grabs us by the shirt and just yanks us into the story. So that's what that moment where the car goes, and it's just hanging there in space. We don't know what's going to happen, but boy, we so want to know. We are so in the story when that happens. The Gospel of Mark and the Gospel of Luke end like that. At the end of both those resurrection stories, the car has gone off the cliff and it is hanging in midair. And all you hear is the wind whistling. Anything could happen. And some of the scenarios are not that great. There are things in our lives that feel like that moment, that feel like the moment where the car gets hucked off the cliff, and we are just hanging there. and time isn't behaving itself. And what I would like you to do this morning, and you won't have to do anything with this that's shared or communal in any way, it's a personal exercise. But what I would like you to do is write down, record, put it in your phone, scribble it on a piece of paper, whatever, but actually physically put down a couple of things in your life that feel like that right now. Just take a few minutes and do that. Things that feel like they're in that moment where the car has gone off the cliff and it's just hanging suspended and you don't know what's going to happen next. I did not choose to do this to torment recent or upcoming graduates. I really didn't. But that can feel like that. If you are currently in therapy, take this list in with you next week. If you're not, keep it with you and reflect upon it. And then the week after that, you'll be in therapy. You know, these lists, man, that's a hard space. That one that I asked you to list. I want to tell you a story about that space from my family's life experience. This Tyrion, who is 11, he just had his birthday this winter, and a really adventuresome kid. He's an extremely capable young athlete. Just one of those kids who knows where he is in the air. You try to teach him something physical that he's never done, and he's like, can you show me how you did that? And you show him, and then he does that. It's disgusting. if you're not like that, and his father isn't. But it's just this awesome kind of kid with all this physical stuff. And he had a bunch of his young buddies over for his birthday party, and what he really wanted to do was go sledding at the gravel pit, which means a whole lot in our family that it doesn't necessarily mean to you, but snow, hills, sleds. So we went to the gravel pit. We happened to just have this huge dump of snow, which you need to slide at this particular place because it's fairly steep. And we got there, and the conditions were perfect. And so Tyrion and his buddies start climbing these huge hills, and everybody came, like all little kids came along. So Tyrion and his buddies came, and Taya came, and I came along just to, you know, I brought the spine board. So we're there. Davis and Kale weren't there. They were busy with something else. And so the big guys go trudging off up these huge hills that are, you know, like just seriously steep, and they start ripping down these things, and they discover the conditions are perfect for making jumps. So they make this humongous jump. First time Tyrion goes off, we paced it off. He cleared 20 feet before he landed. Like, they're just getting all this air, right? So, anyway, I took a couple pictures so you could. So, this is the kids trudging off of the hill. The little one at the bottom is Taya. All right? This is significant as we go on in the story. So, Tyrion and his buddies make these jumps and they start whipping off them and they're doing all their tricks and stuff. And they're getting all this air. They're just having a wild time on these boogie boards. Show us the next one, too. Let's think there's one more of that. And then what happens is Davis and Kale finished up what they were doing, and they knew this was going on, and that the little guys would be having fun, and they just came down to the gravel pit to see what was going on. So they hung out with Taya for a little bit, watching the guys do their thing, the big boys, and then Davis and Kale decided this wasn't fair, and that Taya should have her own jump. And so they started shoveling. They started making a jump for her, and this gap jump. And it was a pretty decent gap. It was from here to the next table, 8 or 10 feet. And, for a little girl on a boogie board, that's a big hole in the snow to jump over. And so Taya climbed up to the top of the on-ramp of this thing.
And she looked down at it, and it's intimidating. I went up there and looked, and she said, "I'm scared, and I have adrenaline." Which she did. She was just like, she's just vibrating, right? And Kale, next slide, Kale gets her in a way that I don't think anybody else in the house does. There's just some, you know, how that is with siblings sometimes. He gets her. And so he says, he called her Punky Monkey. So he says, "Okay, Punky Monkey," says, "you go to the top, I'll go part way with you." And so he goes halfway up the on-ramp to this thing. And he had a couple things he wanted to tweak up there that she was concerned about. So he just tuned it all up for her. And then he just knelt down in the snow facing her. He said, "You can do it." But he was halfway up. He was halfway up, the scariest part of this thing for him. And so she climbed on. And she nailed it. Landed it. I mean, it was beautiful. Beautiful moment. And everybody, all the 11-year-olds, were like, "Yeah!" What does that do inside an 8-year-old girl's soul? It's an awesome moment. For me, what's burned in my memory about that story is Kale saying, "I'll go part way with you." In Luke, the resurrection story that ends with Peter going, what just happened here, you know? The next part of the story is the Road to Emmaus story. And it's a familiar story to lots of us. I know I've taught from it here before. I love the story partly because I think Jesus has his tongue so deep in his cheek he looks deformed. I mean, it's just the dialogue in the story is hilarious, right? Because these guys are trudging home again, heads down. As far as they know, Jesus is dead and the story's over. They're very much in the space that the women are in Mark. They're just terrified. They're bewildered. They're kind of keeping it to themselves, and this guy's walking with them. And he says, "What are you talking about?" And they're like, "Are you the only guy who doesn't know what's been happening in Jerusalem?" To which Jesus says, "Why? What's been happening in Jerusalem? Who wrote this?" You know? I mean, what a question. You weren't part of it? Anyway, so there's this little moment. Every time I read it, I laugh. So what's been happening in Jerusalem? And so they tell him the story about Jesus being crucified. And they walk along and unfold the whole thing. And Jesus says, "Well, you know, that story means something." And then he backs it all the way up to the prophets and tells them what the whole thing meant. Well, what was going on in their heads? Like, who did they imagine they were hiking with that would know this and tell it to them? But they're not seeing Jesus. We do see what we're looking for. And as far as they're concerned, he's dead. So he can't possibly be the one talking to them, and they just don't see it. Ever had an experience like that? So I got a long list of experiences like that. Usually they involve, in my childhood memories, they involve my mother saying, "The thing you're looking for is in my purse." And I go look in her purse and it's not in there, and I hand her purse and she reaches in and pulls it out. So anyway, we see what we're looking for. So they're having this kind of an experience walking along, and then they come to their destination, and Jesus is going to carry on, and they're like, "No, you should stay and have something to eat with us." Jason did it again. Right? This is about one of those ordinary moments. And he sits down at the table with them, and then they realize who he is. He breaks bread, and it's like, bing! And then he disappears. "Hey, you guys, I'm going to tell you what was happening in Jerusalem. I'm going to help you understand the story, this middle part of the story. And that's as far as I'm going to go with you, and then you're going to take it from here." "Okay, Punky Monkey, you can do it. I'll go part way with you." The lists that we made. In the context of what I wanted to push into this morning, the point is not what's on the lists. Those things are hugely significant. I'm not dialing that down in any way. I have no idea what you wrote, but I'll bet some of the things you wrote are huge. The point this morning is that we all have a list like that. The point is that every one of us can think of something in our life that feels like God has hucked the car of our life off the cliff, or it just went off on its own, or we drove it off. However we got there, we are hanging in space, and we do not know what is going to happen next. And time is not behaving itself, and we are terrified, and we are bewildered, and we are sending texts wherever we communicate about meaning that are just strings of question marks. And what we need, just like the disciples in Luke needed, is somebody to say to us, "I'll go part way with you." This is the behavior of Jesus in the crisis of the resurrection. This is the part of the story that actually works in the middle. I know you're scared. I know you've got adrenaline. I know you feel like you're suspended in space. And if you do this wrong, it's going to all go down in a heap. I'll go partway with you. You can do it. If Jesus would behave like that with those that he loved, who are we to ignore that? And some will regard that as a secondary but not complete example of what it means to live with one another the way Jesus lives with us. Going part of the way with one another, people, is living like Jesus. We get stuck on the last part of the story. We get stuck because we're living in the space where somehow we think the way the story's supposed to go is that everything gets tidy again at the end and all the pieces of the plot fall back in like the end of a sitcom. You know, it's very curious the way that the Gospel of Mark ends in lots of Bibles, is there is more. I stopped, and there are verses left. Most of them in your Bibles will say something about how the earliest manuscripts don't include this. When you read the ending to the Gospel of Mark, and you read right to the end of that last bit, you'd have to be completely not paying attention to realize that the language utterly changes from Mark's language, even in the translation. All of a sudden, it's this super tiny chunk of theology. It's like this little compact answer bundle that's been appended to the end of Mark's. They were terrified and bewildered, and they didn't tell anybody anything. It's like the church, some editor said, "We've thought about this further, Mark, and we're going to just tidy this story up for you." And, I mean, I like that valid translations say this is the process, because that helps us in imagining how it happened and what we should make of it, right? It's not that tidy ending has nothing to say to us. That's a very neat, meaningful, true piece of understanding of what Jesus accomplished in rising from the dead. It's just not the way Mark ended the story. So we need to remember this. We need to remember that when we come to these moments in our life where we feel like we're hanging in space, what we need, and what we need to unabashedly ask for in community, is somebody to go part way with us. And I know we don't like to do that because it feels, I don't know, it assails our sense of being in control to confess that we feel out of control. It assails, maybe this is more male than female, I don't know, stereotypically, our sense of adequacy, our sense of being the problem solver, the one who can push things back into place when they feel like they're going out of place. Maybe it reveals that our life is not as tidy and sorted as we would like people to think it is. We have to actually confess to being out of control sometimes when we tell the middle part of the story, right? I am behaving like an idiot, and that's why I feel like I'm suspended in space, because I made the kind of choices that cause chaos in my life, and I do not know what is going to come from this chaos, but I'm so afraid. All kinds of things like that go with revealing that we are in this kind of moment in the middle in our life. But when we face the challenge of choosing to do this, choosing to reveal those hung in space, I don't know what's going to happen next, and I'm terrified moments to one another, we need to remember what Jesus' response is to that. We need to remember that if we say we're a Christ one, if we're a follower of Christ, that we can both speak these things to the resurrected Christ, as the disciples do on the road to Emmaus, and we can expect that the resurrected Christ, present in this time and space, in other followers of Jesus, we can expect that someone brought to us by God will go part of the way with us. Not all the way to a super tidy solution necessarily, but far enough to say, you can do this. The short word for what we experience in our soul when someone does that for us is hope.
That's what hope is. One more step. I can keep going.
I know you're afraid. I know you have adrenaline. You can do it.
I'll go far away with you.
That's not such a bad way to live. And I think it's deeply consistent with the heart of God as we see it in the person of Jesus. So that's what I want to encourage us to watch for. As much as I want to encourage us to be willing to take the risk of sharing those hung in space, bewildered and terrified moments with one another, I want to also encourage us to watch for the occasions to go part of the way with one another. And in this way, to also be Jesus for one another. God, thank you that we are not abandoned in this universe, that you walk with us, that we are not abandoned in the journey of trying to figure out and live out what it means to be followers of Jesus, and that when you left the earth, among the other things that you said is that we would do more than and better than you did, which seems outrageous and ridiculous, but there are those words of yours. And you also said that you would send us the Spirit to show us the way moment by moment. Help us to be attentive. Help us to be obedient. Help us to be willing to go part of the way with one another. In the name of Christ. Amen.